If you could get rid of everything bad about banks and build one from scratch, you'd build a different kind of bank. One that has actual people you can talk to 24/7, not robots. Doesn't invest in fossil fuels, charges no extra fees for spending abroad, and definitely doesn't close before you finish work. You'd build tools to help manage bills, teach kids good money habits, and give interest on personal and joint accounts. So what would that look like? Starling Bank. The bank built for you.
Meet Simon.
Hi there.
Dad of three.
I can easily manage the kids' hectic schedules, but seeing a doctor at a time that suits, nightmare.
Thankfully, Aviva can help. As Simon and his family already have Aviva health insurance, they have 24/7 digital access to a GP.
Amazing. Back to karate, ballet, juggling.
Search Aviva Health. Helping solve your health insurance puzzles, it takes Aviva. This service is a non-contractual benefit. Aviva can withdraw or amend at any time. T's and C's apply.
Hey guys, we're back. This is the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, it's been a couple of weeks since the last episode, and we've been waiting. And I think you've been waiting, listeners, you've been waiting too, to find out what's going on with this whole US Open Cup, Major League Soccer fiasco. We were holding off on this to kind of talk about it in more detail. It still hasn't happened as of recording. By the time you listen to this podcast, it hopefully, maybe, will have happened by then. But before we get to that, Kartik, I want to ask you a question. And be honest, I mean, on this one, as you always are, in the last couple of weeks, or the last few weeks, you mean, how much soccer have you had a chance to watch because of all of this US Open Cup fiasco, MLS fiasco? How much soccer, you mean, what stands out for you from what you've watched?
I've watched hardly any soccer. Leverkusen, the Bayern games.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and the Bundesliga has been...
I watched Ipswich and Rotherham, but that's it. I mean, it's just been a handful of games over the course of the last month. You could start at the beginning of February. You could start with the weekend of the USSF AGM, where I prioritized watching those meetings that weekend over the live soccer football that was on at the same time.
Yeah, and that weekend was a big weekend for soccer, just because, I mean, the Bundesliga, like you mentioned before too, all the protests that happened in Germany against the, you mean, private equity companies, and I mean, and the Bundesliga fans won. The fans of the German clubs won. The Bundesliga saying, okay, we've decided not to move forward with this private equity investments from, you know, Saudi Arabia. I think the United States too. I mean, there's a lot of investment wanting to get in to buy those media rights. And yeah, and that's the reality too, is that so much of the business of soccer last few months, I mean, it's ongoing, right? I mean, this podcast used to be about just talking about watching soccer. The business side of it in the United States especially is so messed up that it kind of actually sucks up so much of our time that we're not able to watch as many games. For me personally, I mean, I've been able to watch, I mean, games, certainly, FA Cup stands out for me, the midweek matches, the Newcastle-Blackburn game was great, Chelsea against Leeds was fantastic.
But why are there midweek FA Cup matches? I think we'll get into that when we talk about the US Open Cup.
Well, let's talk about the US Open Cup then. I mean, for those listeners, I mean, most of our listeners know, basically this started happening in mid-December when Major League Soccer announced that they were planning to not put their teams into the US Open Cup, prioritizing other things and basically complaining about the schedule and about how the US Open Cup is being run. I'll jump right to it, Kartik, and this is really kind of my two cents on this whole thing. Is I don't blame Major League Soccer. Honestly, I blame US Soccer. The way that they're handling not just the US Open Cup, but the US Open Cup is a great example of how screwed up the whole system is in the United States in terms of soccer. You've got leagues competing against leagues on the men's side and the women's side. You've got a U.S. Soccer Federation that is weak, that is incapable of really, you know, putting together a tournament, getting all these different competing leagues together to agree to play in a tournament. I mean, to me, the U.S. soccer is a shambles. I mean, really, they're supposed to be the governing body of soccer in this country. Yes, they do a good job in terms of organizing the men's national team and the women's national team. And I'm sure there's a lot of other things that they do a good job of. But right now, I mean, Kartik, you look at across U.S. soccer, how chaotic it is. And a lot of it, and that's one of the reasons why you've spent so much time of your time trying to, you know, report on this and interview the people at the leagues. And to me, I mean, in terms of press conferences, Major League Soccer had a press conference shortly after that decision in mid-December. U.S. Soccer has been completely silent. There's been no press conferences. There's been no availability for the press to speak to U.S. Soccer to find out what's going on. We've heard, you know, through the grapevine, which is basically through Twitter, that's where we're getting most of our news from. And most of them are independent reporters that are reporting the news. To me, Kartik, this is a perfect example of how screwed up the whole U.S. soccer system is. What's your thoughts?
Well, first off, I think Europe has contributed to this in two ways, which I'll get to in a minute. But in terms of the U.S. Soccer Federation not speaking, I think, look, they have two active lawsuits still going against them, and they have two that have recently been settled. So I think there is a fear of litigation. There is a fear of saying the wrong thing. You had in Sunil Gulati in the past a very undisciplined person running the federation in terms of who he spoke to, when he spoke to them, how he spoke to them, etc. And I think the lawyers at USSF are probably telling Cindy Parlow-Cohn and JT Batson, hey, let's be much more careful about what we say because we could get sued one way or another.
But no reporter is going to sue them. What we're asking for is transparency.
We're asking for them to actually speak to the press. No, I disagree with that because they should be transparent. Okay. But if you say the wrong thing, which that federation has a history of doing,
I know,
from their leadership, you're going to get sued.
What are they going to say that's so wrong that they get sued? They can be open and say, hey, we're still in conversations with Major League Soccer. We've been back and forth. That the head of the U.S. Open Cup committee has resigned. There were rumors that Stu Holden stepped down too. But all these things have been kind of reported on basically through Twitter. There's been no dialogue with U.S. Soccer as far as explaining, hey, this is the situation that we're in. Here's what's happening. We're still in discussions. We hope to have a resolution soon. They're not going to get sued for that.
No, but, well, I'm privy to some of the things that's gone on, and I don't want to talk about it on this show.
Okay. I know why
they haven't made the state, that particular statement, the specific statement it is potentially legal.
Okay. I mean, I get why they are really careful about what they do. Even outside of the U.S. Open Cup, I mean, you look at back at the AGM, kind of in the public session of that, where it was open to the public, where we could actually watch that. The announcement in terms of what they're planning on doing and giving an update, kind of an open session of the U.S. Soccer AGM. The way that the operation of U.S. Soccer operates is very insular. It's really rare that they speak to the press. You mean in an open situation where we can ask questions?
No, and you're absolutely right about that. And the Federation has a bad habit of picking and choosing certain reporters they want to feed information to, and pitting reporters against reporters. They've had a history of that. And in addition to your point on the open and closed session, that was quite bizarre. And I'm still trying to find out what happened in the closed session as it applies to NISA, which is not related. Well, it is kind of related to Open Cup, but apparently there were some things discussed in that closed session related to their venues that I've been spending the last 10 days trying to scramble and get information about. So, or more than 10 days, however long it's been since then, 20 days. So yeah, your point is very well taken on that. And let's remember, U.S. soccer is a nonprofit. So they have certain reporting obligations, and they seem to do the bare minimum on that. And that's another thing about the Open Cup. So you mentioned Arthur Mattson, who I know, who's obviously a leading figure in the sport here in Florida. I think maybe the most influential person in Central Florida in growing the sport in the last 20 years or so. He was the chair of the Open Cup committee, and he resigned. And I know some of the rules and procedures of the federation, I don't want to get too deep into this, but in terms of the legal stuff, may have been violated in the process of what triggered Mattson to step down. And that's something I think more will come out in time. But you're right. Maybe they should be open. Okay, so what I should say, Chris, is I think that the danger is that they should not be meeting. They maybe have a problem meeting with reporters and then saying the wrong thing. But if they put out a printed statement, that's different, right? They can do that. And yeah. they haven't done that. So, yeah, I guess to your point, they haven't even put out a statement. I was thinking more of a press conference. But, yeah, statement, they haven't done. They haven't done that either, right? We haven't heard from them since December, that Wednesday after the
the press release that said that basically that
December 20th was the date.
That MLS is, you mean, basically move was denied in terms of you mean, exiting the tournament, you mean, exiting the US Open Cup. I mean, and that's the thing, though, too. I mean, so with Major League Soccer, I mean, obviously they're doing, you mean, everything. Basically, what they're trying to do is kind of really kind of, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, what this tells me, Kartik, is that Major League Soccer is the one with the power in this country. It's not the U.S. Soccer Federation. U.S. Soccer Federation, to me, looks weak in this. We don't know the final decision in terms of what happens with the U.S. Open Cup, but there's been plenty of reports through Twitter and independent reporters that looks like it's going to be 8 teams from Major League Soccer will participate in the 2024 U.S. Open Cup, and the remaining will not because of many different reasons. Including CONCACAF Champions League, which some of the teams have exited that tournament already. So, like to me, I mean, what this tells me, and what I said before too, where I really don't blame Major League Soccer on this one, I blame U.S. Soccer, is that U.S. Soccer has shown that they are weak, that they don't have much power at all. Major League Soccer is the one calling the shots. They're the one that said mid-December, hey, we're pulling out. And then, okay, now it's going to be 8 teams going into the tournament. Probably next year, that might be zero. So to me, U.S. Soccer has shown no strength, you mean, no capability of basically organizing soccer. I mean, you look at the system that we have in place. We have leagues, again, competing against each other. You have some cities where you have teams from separate leagues in the same city that will never play each other unless it's for the U.S. Open Cup. And with the U.S. Open Cup in the future, who knows if this competition will continue? I mean, we're now at the end of February, and this U.S. Open Cup thing still hasn't been resolved. It's just a complete mess.
Yeah, with the NISA venue thing, by the way, I mean, I'm trying to track the approval process for Showalter Field in Winter Park. That's a local story for me. But that would actually put Club de Leon in NISA about 5 miles away from where Orlando City plays. Yet those clubs will never meet. Right. And now, especially with Open Cup, maybe they'll play Orlando B. Same thing, Atlanta. There's now a new NISA club in Irvine that's going to play in the same stadium as the USL club, although maybe they'll play each other. But I blame Europe for part of this, what's gone on in Europe, because, look, the Premier League, everybody likes to think the Premier League is this virtuous thing, but they pushed the FA into making changes to the FA Cup that I blew the whistle on at the time and thought were very detrimental. That's why you're watching midweek FA Cup matches. That's why I wasn't able to watch this round of the FA Cup, because it was midweek. They've eliminated the replays in some of the rounds. Now, the fans of the top 6 clubs think this is great because they're like, ah, the replays weren't paying. Arsenal and Man City don't need to be playing extra fixtures. Well, that was a revenue driver for lower division teams that they've now lost. And then in terms of the midweek fixtures, if Middlesbrough gets to host a midweek game in the FA Cup against Chelsea, let's say, they don't have as good much of an opportunity to fill that stadium as they would at the weekend. So Both of these things were done for the Premier League to hurt the rest of the pyramid. Now, they didn't withdraw from the FA Cup, to their credit, but I think they were beginning to make threats about it. So MLS sees that. You give MLS an inch, they're going to take a mile, right? Because they're the most, they're so malignant and malicious in the way they conduct themselves. So the Premier League, they get concessions from Europe. The other big event, as Jeff Reuter has now reported at The Athletic, is that the European Court of Justice came up with that Super League ruling the very day after U.S. Soccer issued the statement. That was December 20th. December 21st, we got the court ruling. And MLS apparently has taken the court ruling to U.S. Soccer to threaten them and say, hey, you really can't put sanctions against us. When I say put sanctions, that's different than sanctioning, right? You can't punish us, I should say, because of this ruling. Now, I agree with you on U.S. Soccer. I would say to U.S. Soccer, if I'm U.S. Soccer, I'd say, okay, that's a European Court of Justice decision. Our antitrust laws, our governing laws, our laws governing governing Olympic sports in particular, right? So this puts soccer in a different category than a football and American football, right? Is different. Our laws, the Ted Stevens Act, is different than what they have in Europe. So if you really believe that, sue us. That's what I would have done if I'm U.S. soccer. But as I said earlier, they're lawsuit averse. So European Court of Justice makes this ruling. MLS lawyers, and MLS is a league run by lawyers, for those who don't know the people who are the highest levels in MLS, they're all lawyers. It threatens U.S. soccer, apparently, according to The Athletic's reporting, with this. And U.S. soccer then kind of get scared. But to your point then, or to my point earlier about Arthur Mattson resigning as Open Cup chairman, they then began back-channeling with MLS, apparently. This is some reporting I can do. I don't know if it's been in other places. I think it has been, particularly Hudson River Blue, Michael Batista, who's done such a fantastic job reporting on this cup. They start back-channeling with MLS going around the committee. And so that is not right. And that also, Chris, goes to your point that rather than governing the game properly, they are just trying to placate MLS. And yes, there's mass confusion in the soccer pyramid. Basically, we're in a position where because they have competing leagues and U.S. soccer has not played referee, if a league puts a team in a city, then the other competing league tries to put a team in that same city or nearby. You've had it just in the last couple of months in your area, in Jacksonville. And it's happening all over the country. I just mentioned NISA putting a team in a stadium, not just in a town with a USL team, but in the very same stadium. And then, of course, moving a team within a couple of miles of MLS. I don't like territorial rights and territorial restrictions. I think that that's anti-competitive. But at the same time, U.S. soccer has to at least be talking to these leagues and saying, hey, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea, MLS, or hey, this isn't a good idea, USL. And they don't do that. They plainly don't.
Yeah, part of this too is that the way that U.S. soccer runs its business, which is, I mean, complete chaos, right? This has been going on probably, what, 2 decades, Kartik, yeah. As far as like just kind of mismanagement of the leagues, I mean, whether it was the NASL back in the day or the new NASL, and then of course Major League Soccer. I mean, the soccer wars, which you wrote, right? You wrote the book. That's probably what 10 years ago now. You know what I mean, and it's still
it's horribly dated at this point.
Well, it is and it isn't though. But you mean it is out of date, but then it is very current because the same things that were happening 10 years ago are happening today in terms of infighting, complete disorganization. You wrote about I think in that book about Sunil Gulati, the U.S. Soccer Federation president, trying to get the camps together, the leagues together, say, hey guys, we need to figure out a solution here to make this work. We don't have that anymore. And Sunil, I was not a big fan of at all, but at least with Sunil, he did try to actually organize things and try to get people to agree. What we have right now is complete chaos. I mean, as a soccer fan living in the United States, I get why people prefer oftentimes to watch soccer from Europe, whether it's the Bundesliga, whether it's Serie A, whether it's the French League, whether it's the Premier League, whatever league it may be, or La Liga, because it runs like clockwork. It runs on time. You know when the games are going to be on. There's no chaos like you have in the United States. We have Major League Soccer fighting with the referees. And you're bringing in youth soccer referees and college soccer referees to actually officiate games because there's pickets going on. I mean, to me, that's not happening in any other country, any other major soccer country in the world. And to me, I just see the U.S. Soccer Federation as being incredibly weak, and it's not a good look.
The referee situation is people think we beat up on MLS and all this other stuff, and you can have, I think, an effective counterpoint to some of our opinions on MLS. On the referee thing, I don't see the counterpoint. I mean, I think people who are making the counter argument are just being very, very cynical, to say the least. I mean, this is a horrible look. And how it got to this point, I know a lot of referees, so I talk to them. The demands, given how MLS represents its business and how well they appear to be doing and how much money they're generating, how much revenue is coming because of Messi and Leagues Cup and Mexican national team friendlies and expansion fees and blah, blah, blah. Their demands are not just reasonable. I mean, I think they're mandatory, right? I think that MLS should be going beyond the demands that the PSRA is making. So it's a terrible look. Yeah, there isn't this chaos in other countries. And this is a byproduct of the American system, where you have a lot of tribalism and you have a federation that has never been willing to lead. And to your point about Sunil Gulati, I see that both ways. I think, yes, he was very good at getting everybody in a room. I have to give him a lot of credit for that. NASL, USL, getting Alec Papadakis and whoever the commissioner of NASL was at the time into a room and saying, hey, guys, you need to work it out. Hey, guys, you need to try and work together, although it never did work out. But he did do that. He was paying attention to the chaos on the lower division level. However, the flip side is, I think everything he did was done to benefit Major League Soccer in the broader sense. So Carlos Cordero and now Cindy Parlow Cohn have inherited a bad hand, where if the federation tries to retake control and rein in MLS, there is institutional resistance to it. So I think that that's a problem. However, the USSF board has turned over recently, and my understanding is there is not as much support for MLS on the board as there used to be. So this could be a process. It also could be Don Garber and the owners understanding, hey, if we wait another year or two, USSF board is going to be totally independent. They're going to put their foot down on us. Let's make our power play now. Let's do it while the federation is still weak, while the federation is still in transition, and let's also do it at a time where it's a maximum effect for Soccer United marketing and Apple, because Messi is in the league and because Leagues Cup has just launched. So, and because we've lost the U.S. Open Cup rights. So this is all very interesting. Although, I mean, look, another subplot of what's happened in the last couple of weeks, and maybe we'll get to this in a second, Chris, is the TV situation. You know, as I'm burning up the phone lines talking to people, people in USL, not necessarily at the league itself, but at the clubs, are really, really upbeat about their situation in local media and in national media because MLS has gone to Apple. I mean, they're feeling really good about their situation as a result.
Yeah, well, yeah, and also NWSL, right, in terms of their TV deal and their games available, across many different networks.
But I'm saying, like, for USL teams, they're really excited about the local potential. So I hadn't thought about with Apple. Okay, so Apple, we thought about, okay, that's going to leave ESPN, CBS, NBC open. And certainly NWSL and USL have taken advantage of that. USL just renewed with ESPN. They already have a deal with CBS. They're going to have games on CBS network television this year. But what USL clubs, and this is multiple clubs, this is a half dozen clubs, different clubs telling me privately, is it has opened the door for them to get on local television. So even if those specific channels weren't showing MLS games, there would be some regional sports network in their area that was showing MLS. There was just this thing, thought that, well, you're second division. USL, by virtue of MLS going into the Apple vacuum, has allowed itself to get on local television. And so there are three top 15 markets in the country, media markets, that MLS doesn't have teams in: Phoenix, Detroit, and Tampa Bay. All three have USL teams. All three have gotten linear over the air, not regional sports net, over the air television deals in their markets. That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I get why Major League Soccer feels threatened a little bit too, right? Because, I mean, all the games are behind a paywall, except for maybe one game a weekend on either FS1 or Fox. But even Fox is putting in like a really weak effort in terms of promoting these games. So there's not a lot in it for them, it seems. So, the driver is MLS Season Pass. But for those fans who are not subscribing to MLS Season Pass behind the paywall, I mean, having games available more than ever for USL across ESPN Plus, across CBS, the actual network CBS, CBS Sports Network, and other places, that league is going to be more accessible than ever before. Now it's up to the viewers to decide, are they going to tune into those games? What are those viewing numbers going to look like? Is it worth it? Is there much of an appetite there for fans wanting to watch soccer in the United States, the local team? And it could be on the local regional network also, which is something that Major League Soccer doesn't have. So MLS in many ways is actually maybe ahead of the game in terms of having all of their games behind a paywall, while USL and NWSL, kind of a hybrid approach where it's some on streaming, some on TV, some on cable. We'll have to wait and see kind of which one ends up being the winner.
Yeah, I do want to say in deference to MLS and Apple, I do think it's very easy to identify where and when an MLS game is. Where you find it on Apple and what time it's at. It's generally at 7:30 local time, whatever the local time is for the kickoff. USL. It's going to be all over the map this year. I'm just warning USL fans about that. And if you're in a local market, it's also kind of fragmented because some. So, for example, Tampa Bay just did their TV deal with Channel 44, which is a CBS Paramount owned station, but actually a CW affiliate, but it's owned by CBS corporate. They will not show the games that are also on CBS because they're a CBS corporate channel. Right. So basically, you might find some rowdy games on CBS Sports Network or on Big CBS or on Golazo that are not on. Actually, the Golazo games will also be on 44. But you don't have to have this kind of explainer for MLS. So that's an advantage. And as far as NWSL, I mean, I've tried to wrap my head around this, Chris. I'm going to ask you a question. Have you figured out where each NWSL game is going to be? Because I have.
With Now, you can stream all the drama from the Premier League instantly and without a contract.
The stuff that dreams are made of!
This Sunday, title rivals collide as Liverpool take on Manchester City at Anfield.
Can you believe it?
Get all Sky Sports channels for a day or a whole month with a Now Sports membership. Stream Liverpool versus Manchester City live this Sunday from 3:45 with Now.
18 plus Sky Sports content streamed via internet. Full terms apply.
Nothing beats Cheltenham.
It's the top jockeys, the top horses.
He's coming home strong at the hill.
Hurrah for that first race. Unbelievable.
And they're off.
Betfred this Cheltenham and get an offer on every race.
4 days of world-class racing.
I love the festival. It's the best jumps racing on the planet.
Love Cheltenham.
Betfred.
Minimum of one offer per race at Cheltenham. Valid between 12th and 15th of March 2024. Team seats apply. Available in-store and online. Offers may vary. 18 plus per gambler.org.
And my name's Stan.
I'm Anne.
Nice to meet you.
So you took up photography when?
I've always loved photography, but I turned it into earning a living.
That's
at
right,
60.
Yeah.
I enrolled on a day course.
What, college?
I loved going to college.
It's good you can retrain and do something.
Let's talk about working, learning, saving and making the most of living longer. Phoenix Group is the UK's largest long-term savings and retirement business. Search Phoenix Group Living Longer.
Well, we've got the schedule at worldsoccertalk.com, the NWSL TV schedule, and we have all of the listings there. Well, actually, I have to double check to make sure they're updated because, it's a moving target.
But there's stuff on NWSL Plus also now.
Exactly, which we'll have to wait and see how that looks too. But that, for me, is going to be my go-to place or our app, which is Soccer TV Schedules app, which is on Android and Apple. And that's free to download. And that you can go ahead and favorite teams or filter it by NWSL, just to see all those listings, as you can do for any team or any league. So that's my go-to, because otherwise, without that, I would be completely lost. Honestly, as a soccer fan, I would be like, oh my gosh, I have no idea where these games are going to be. You mentioned too, with MLS Season Pass, it's easy now, just, you know, Saturday night, 7:30 Eastern time, or 7:30 local time, to see, you know, Inter Miami, whoever it may be. The reality is that this season so far, Inter Miami's first game was on a Wednesday night to open the season. The next game was on a Sunday night, I think at 9 o'clock Eastern time. And then this weekend's game on Saturdays at 4:30 Eastern time, against Orlando, which is going to be on Big Fox and MLS Season Pass. So Inter Miami so far seems to be the one that they're going to move around a little, to try to maximize the viewership for that time period, or at least get people watching that, and then hoping that they also watch the 7:30 local time games on a Saturday night, and some of the other random ones that appear at different times. From this first week of Major League Soccer Season Pass, MLS Season Pass, I mean, I've been watching the Inter Miami games, and I watched the LAFC Seattle game. So far, coverage is good. I mean, we're actually missing some people, though. In addition to the reporting that we did at worldsoccertalk.com about all of the commentators let go, and the people that they didn't rehire, and those that they did, I think Katie Witham has been missing in action. She hasn't appeared, and she was one of the best persons last season, kind of doing the sideline reporting, doing the interviews. We reported a couple of weeks ago that Christina Uncle's no longer on MLS Season Pass or MLS 360, and she was the star of the show in terms of her referee analysis. Melissa Ortiz is no longer with MLS Season Pass, and she was there last season. So as the season goes on, we're finding out more and more people have been either let go or not rehired. So MLS Season Pass is definitely cutting back, but so far the production's been good. And I'm looking forward to watching more and more of MLS 360 with Kevin Egan as the host. So yes, listeners, I do watch Major League Soccer. All right, Kartik. Oh my gosh. I mean, this is like last few months, and the last couple of weeks have been so frustrating. We've been wanting to do the podcast, holding off, hoping that a decision will be made. I think we know what the decision's going to be. It just feels dirty. It feels like just a horrible experience. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that are just going to hold their hands up and say, hey, enough's enough. You mean, I just quit trying to figure out how to watch these games. But what I would say is that if you have been supportive of the US Open Cup in terms of it keeping it alive, when the tournament does start, definitely go check out some of these games. You mean, because it's to me one of the highlights of a regular season is seeing those games. Is to me just like the FA Cup, sometimes even better, sometimes not so much. But you can get that with any cup competition in terms of consistency. All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. A couple of comments here from our listeners. First up is Chris. He says, when it comes to the Fox, TNT, ESPN, mega streaming app, I think it's a good idea in that it makes it easier to manage streaming subscriptions since everything would be in one app. The days of having multiple streaming subscriptions would largely be over, though you would still need Peacock, Paramount Plus, and MLS Season Pass to watch MLS, Premier League, and the Champions League. However, if the price point is too high, people are not going to subscribe to it, especially if it's over $60 a month. So far, what we've heard, Chris, is that the pricing, although not official yet, is going to hover around the $50 a month, which to me, I think it's almost a non-starter if it doesn't show everything I want to see. I mean, I would have to have Fubo and this thing and Peacock and Paramount Plus. And of course, there's been talks about Peacock and Paramount Plus possibly merging together. That makes more sense for me as a soccer fan, but I don't know. I mean, whether it's the antitrust, to me, this app seems to be dead on arrival. I just wonder whether or not it'll actually happen. Regarding Major League Soccer, a couple of comments here from Dermot and Robert. First up, Dermot says, I was reading the article about the upcoming Argentina friendlies. If you add the Copa America matches and potential Olympic matches to those matches, should Miami season ticket holders get some sort of a rebate for the matches Messi will not play? Or will Major League Soccer adjust the Miami games so that Messi can still play the full number of MLS games? Or does the club just say there is no guarantee any particular player will play? Kartik, what do you think about that one? That's an easy answer, right?
Well, I think that they have a precedent where they rearranged all sorts of LA Galaxy games the year Beckham arrived in order to maximize his appearances. So they've done it before.
Yeah, I think the difference though is season ticket holders, right? How many of those were season ticket holders, or how many of those were actually kind of just pay at the gate? You know what I mean, for those games that they're rearranged.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that they were probably more pay at the gate, but I mean, this happens in other sports. You know, I know someone who went over for a Liverpool Spurs match and. Sky picked up the game and moved it to a certain time and that had to change their flight, even though they had booked only 2 months before the match. This was several seasons ago. But, you know, that happens in the Premier League. It happens in the NFL every week. It happens in college football. We find out the start times 13 days because we say, okay, ABC picked up this game. CBS picked up this game. ESPN's doing this one. So it happens in other leagues and other sports. College basketball is one where it doesn't happen. It's the start time is the start time, the published start time. So maybe MLS fans have to get used to it, particularly with Messi. They're not going to have this opportunity again, right? They're not going to get someone of this stature that's going to potentially cut through and get casual sports fans to come to an MLS game, particularly as they are now on Apple. I know we get in, people get very angry that we keep bringing up that issue, but it is an issue because they're not talking about MLS on in mainstream sporting circles the way they used to. But they have this tool that can get everybody talking about them. So why not move start times? I'm sorry for the ticket holders. That's just from a business standpoint. If I'm MLS, I would do what I can to maximize it.
Yeah, the answer to Dermot's question for me is that he's going to miss a bunch of games. He's going to miss a lot of games. There's going to be no rebates. There's no guarantee that any particular player will play. There will be some fans that will feel, I don't know, maybe cheated, but upset definitely that he won't play. But to me, it's a bigger issue, which the bigger issue is that to me, fans really shouldn't be supporting individual players. You support your team.
It's always happened. Okay, so just I'll give you an example. This person probably is listening to the podcast. So, I know a reporter from South Florida that drove up to Orlando against the Galaxy just because this reporter liked Robbie Keane. And Bruce Arena then made it very clear, you know, I didn't bring Robbie Keane because I don't want him playing on turf, right? So, and Orlando had turf at the time. They were at the Citrus Bowl at the time. So, you know, you even had reporters making decisions about individual players. Maybe that's not the wisest thing.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's really, I mean, I don't want to tell fans what to do, but to me, I mean, to me personally, I support my team. And through thick and thin, I mean, no matter, players come and go, I'm not going to personally support or follow one player. I might have my favorite player, but the likelihood that player moves on to a different club, I'm not going to switch clubs or start kind of wearing the shirt color of a different team because he's moved to a different team. But there are a lot of fans out there. There are Messi fans that wherever Messi goes, they will follow. It's strange. Okay, Robert says, is Inter Miami MLS's first super team? Many pundits are predicting Miami will be the top team in the league. I know Kartik believes the MLS needs a super team. Not sure those are his exact words. So far, no real dynasties, but a couple of teams like Seattle, LAFC, and maybe Cincinnati and Columbus stay on top due to owners willing to spend and good management. Miami's main claim to the top is big spending and bending the rules, not good management. They may be burnt again this season. if they did it again, if they did again violate the league rules, which will really need to change, they will be the top team at times this year, but probably not enough of the time to finish on top. Kartik is into Miami MLS's super team, and does MLS need them?
MLS needs a super team. I don't know that it's Inter Miami. I still look at the early years of MLS. Sorry, Metro Stars fans and New England Revolution fans and Miami Fusion fans, Chris. The DC United dynasty is still something I think very fondly about it. And the way Kevin Payne, Bruce Arena constructed that team. Our friend Thomas Rongan took him over. I think the second iteration of DC United is something I think fondly about under Petr Novak, and the runs that the Galaxy have had, the Chicago Fire had. That was more Open Cup, but they did win the one MLS Cup. But they won a bunch of Open Cups, kind of in close succession, with Peter Wilt as their GM, and then obviously Seattle in the Open Cup. I think those have been good for the game in this country. I think you need that. You have to have that.
What I would say is that MLS Season Pass needs a super team, and that team is Inter Miami, and it's not just Messi. I mean, so kind of watching this team play, you're almost hoping that they lose, but then if you're a fan, you're hoping that they win. Obviously, it's a team that everyone loves to hate or loves, and that is an attraction where every weekend, that's probably the first game I'll look for. I'll be like, okay, Inter Miami's playing. They're playing on Saturday. Maybe I should go ahead and make sure I'm free at that time so I can watch it live. With the rest of the league, there's no other team that I would say that about. St. Louis, I love seeing, the atmosphere, the crowds, the TIFOs. You look at the rest of the league, LA Galaxy impressed me big time against Inter Miami last Sunday night. Really good performance, especially from Ricky Pooch. But I'm not going to tune in I'm not going to subscribe to MLS Season Pass just for LA Galaxy. So the league as a whole, I think you need that Inter Miami. You actually need more than one super team to get people to watch, to care, to care about actually subscribing, because it's not cheap. All right, listeners, there's a bunch of different ways you can get in touch with us. We'd love to get your feedback. You can post it on worldsoccertalk.com. You can go ahead and leave us a voicemail at 561-247-4625. Twitter is at worldsoccertalk. You can also reach us youtube.com/worldsoccertalk. Leave your comments there. facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can leave that messages there too. Kartik, where can they find you on Beyond the 90?
Beyondthe90.substack.com. We're really heavy into this this U.S. Open Cup stuff and various things going on in Florida. USL season starts next week, so we're going to be really busy once that starts and pick up MPSL and NISA as those kick on and USLW League. And then, of course, I think a big part of the focus of our site is going to be the USL Super League, the new women's league with two teams in Florida starting in August, Jacksonville in a year or two. And you mentioned Christina Uncle earlier in the podcast. She is the president of the Tampa Bay Sun. And right now I'm looking at that club as kind of the model club in this new league. And it's, by the way, a Division I league. They just got their, I think since the last time we recorded, they got their D1 sanctioning. So they are on the same plane as NWSL, which goes back kind of to your point, Chris, about, confusion, right? And the Federation. We have two D1 women's leagues now, which I think is very confusing for people. Also, you can find me on Twitter at KKFLA737.
Yeah, if you did have a new fan or a family member that wants to learn about soccer and they sat down and said, hey, talk to me about like U.S. soccer and how it's structured. So what's the difference between Inter Miami and, I don't know, a Tampa Bay Rowdies? Or, when do they play each other? And then you go down the list in terms of all the different, the way it's so different versus overseas, which to me, overseas is a little bit easier to understand and to get into. So as a result, I get why MLS is trying to own everything. It's trying to be in control and be the only game in town. I disagree with that completely, but I think it's US soccer's place to really, really stand firm and try to prevent this. But I think it's too late. I think they've completely lost it in terms of the way that they organize things. All right, Kartik, we covered a lot of ground. Listeners, thank you so much for your loyalty and listening and your perspectives. We'll be back next time. Enjoy your football.
Guys, me, Peter Crouch from That Peter Crouch Podcast, where we talk all things football and housery. Just dropping in to tell you that you can stream all the Sky Sports action on Now, including the Liverpool City game on March the 10th. And the best bit is, you can get instant access, easy access without a contract. Visit nowtv.com or search Now Sports.
Nothing beats Cheltenham.
It's the top jockeys, the top horses.
He's coming home strong at the hill.
Hurrah for that first race. Unbelievable.
And they're off.
Betfred this Cheltenham and get an offer on every race.
4 days of world-class racing.
I love the festival. It's the best jumps racing on the planet.
Love Cheltenham.
Betfred.
Minimum of one offer per race at Cheltenham. Valid between 12th and 15th of March 2024. Team seats apply. Available in-store and online. Offers may vary. 18 plus per gambler.org.
And my name's Stan.
I'm Anne. Nice to meet you.
So you took up photography when?
I've always loved photography, but I turned it into earning a living.
That's
at
right,
60.
Yeah.
I enrolled on a day course.
What, college?
I loved going to college.
It's good you can retrain and do something.
Yeah.
Let's talk about working, learning, saving and making the most of living longer. Phoenix Group is the UK's largest long-term savings and retirement business. Search Phoenix Group Living Longer.
Hi, I'm Adrienne from the podcast Power Hour, and my latest episode is brought to you by NHS Talking Therapies. If you're struggling with feelings of depression, excessive worry, panic attacks, social anxiety, post-traumatic stress, or obsessions and compulsions, NHS Talking Therapies can help. Seeking help through NHS Talking Therapies can be one of the best steps a person can take to overcome their mental health issues and get back on track. NHS Talking Therapies offer different types of therapy depending on your symptoms. So this could be guided self-help, cognitive behavioural therapy, or counselling for depression. And there are also therapies that look at the link between your depression and your relationships. NHS Talking Therapies, delivered by trained clinicians, are a free, effective, and confidential way to treat common mental health issues. They can be offered online, on the phone or in person, and are also available through multilingual therapists or confidential interpreters. Your GP can refer you for NHS Talking Therapies, or you can refer yourself online at nhs.uk/talk.